The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 137 for Wednesday, March 4th, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me this evening, as per usual on the first week of the month, is Mr. Hammond Chamberlain. What's going on, sir?
Not a lot. How you doing, Joel?
Good, man. I am very busy, but that's a good thing. I appreciate, you know, work coming in and work going out, but it also means late nights and hopefully very poignant podcasts. So if we seem short tonight, folks, we apologize. I do have a lot of stuff to do, and I don't want to be up until 5 o'clock in the morning doing it. So,
well, I have to admit that I've been really overwhelmed with my regular day job, and I've been looking forward to this week in particular because I have this and then Grumpy Cast and nice. Just the fun shows to kind of get my brain turned off and just have some fun.
And that's what I like about, you know, the Citadel Cafe is that there's not a lot of prep. You know, like, we're going to talk about the stuff that you're going to watch anyway. You know, like, you're talking about what your geeky week has been like, or in your case, your geeky month. You know, and same for me. Like, I don't really go out of my way to watch anything new. I just kind of, it happens, you know. I tended to park it and watch Netflix on the weekends for a little bit longer than I do normally during the week, and I usually have some things to chat about at that point. However, you have been doing more than just watching stuff. I haven't listened yet, but you mentioned this to me privately a little while ago before you were able to announce it. You had another epic interview on Beyond the Playlist.
I was able to land an interview with Battlestar Galactica original and reimagined Richard Hatch.
Right, so because he played Starbuck in the first one, right?
No, he was Apollo in the first
Apollo,
one.
Apollo, sorry. I knew it was, yeah, Apollo. Yeah,
he was Apollo, and then he was Tom Sarek in the new one.
Yes, yeah, I knew who he was in the new one. Yeah, that's incredible. Like, how can you tell us? I mean, like, don't spoil the interview because obviously everybody should just go and listen. But how did that come about? Like, how did you end up getting an interview with Richard Hatch?
It really was as simple as I went to his website and sent him an email and said, "Hey, I host a podcast that interviews creative people about creative process. What do you say?"
Wow.
And within probably 6 emails, I had the thing nailed down.
That's amazing. I guess it never hurts to ask, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of inspired me to start, you know, finding websites of other people and kind of following the same path.
Absolutely. What number are you at with Grumpy Cast? Are you coming? Or not Grumpy Cast. That's the other really cool show you do. The Beyond the Playlist. I know that you don't number them when you post them, but you know, you keep track, right?
Yes, I do. And I'm going to do something naughty and look because I don't remember.
You're coming up on 100, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Real close.
Yeah.
I think. Let's see here. So he was number 97.
Right.
And then I have a really cool musician named Nima coming up on 98. I have the drummer for the band Spock's Beard for 99, and then Mr. Scott Johnson joins me for 100.
Oh, nice! What a great way to round out number 100.
Yeah.
And then the interviews.
And then the interviews I have coming up for 102, 103, and 104, I feel like are some of my best.
Wow. So have those interviews happened already?
Yes. I've already recorded up to 104.
Oh, my gosh. So you are 7 episodes ahead.
Uh-huh.
You're scheduling at least that far ahead, if not more.
Yeah.
I don't know who's going to be on the Citadel Cafe with me 2 weeks from now. Do as Hammond does, not as Joel does.
Well, the only reason I do it is because, like, I'm going to be out of town next month.
Right.
So I'll have 10 days where I'm completely gone. And then you never know when something will come up. And so far, I've been at this since December 8th of 2013, and I've yet to miss a week.
That's amazing. That is really, really amazing. I've missed weeks because of sickness. I've missed weeks because of having to take the summer off for a vacation. I've never been able to record ahead of time and fill in a gap, with the exception of maybe one Christmas. I think maybe one Christmas me and the guys did like a special Saturday episode and I threw it up, but it wasn't super long. But that's great, man. So how was the interview? Like, did you feel it went well? Was he?
I feel like it was pretty good. In fact, the response I got from his, like the lady I scheduled it through.
Right.
She actually listened and said it was a really good piece.
Oh, so good. Well, that's great. I mean, like that's the first step, right? I mean, like you've got the track record. I mean, you've got 100 episodes under your belt, or you know, at least, you know, so now you've interviewed Richard Hatch, and hopefully when, you know, he talks to his buddies or, you know, anything like that happens, when you approach him or approach new people, they'll be like, oh, geez, he interviewed Richard Hatch. You know, yeah. that's sure. Like, I'll do that. I mean, not to say that your show doesn't have that legitimacy to it already, but there's that PR, you know, like there's that weight that, having someone that's been on television and in films, on your show, I think, on a podcast specifically, I think that really kind of shoots it forward.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I kind of had that a little bit with, my, Doug Drexler stuff.
Right.
He won an Oscar for his makeup work in Dick Tracy. I mean,
yeah,
that kind of carries some, you know, some of the, in the podcast community, I've got the, you know, the Frog Pants people that I've fallen on, you and
course,
Scott,
yeah,
and some of the, and, you know, Garrett and some of these people.
Yeah.
And then with some of the makeup people, I have, you know, David Greathouse, who was on Face Off, and he did his mask. He does the original mask for Mushroom Head and directed a bunch of their videos. So I've kind of been doing that in a couple different realms, so that when people go look after I ask them, like, oh, he's done so-and-so, who's done these things, and this lady's been in a bunch of independent films, and this person won an Oscar, and this person's been on TV, and so I've kind of spread it out to, so that those kind of credentials are there for the people who are looking.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm fully aware that my interviews aren't for, like, every week, aren't for everybody. There are going to be people who listen for the first 15 minutes and go, oh, I know who this person is, I'm going to listen to it. Or I couldn't care less who this person is. And then you can turn it off.
Yeah. And that's okay though. I mean, like that's the great thing about podcasts, is that you're not answering to anybody but what your personal interests are. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're a fan of these people, so it's a fan driven show. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the things that is a real benefit, to podcasting, is coming at it from that angle. And I think that it's one of the reasons why it has that fanboy stigma, you know, that mm-hmm. fanboy perception, as Phil Rude pointed out in the chat room. but it's a hard nut to crack, right? Because when you're dealing with fans, they're not going to necessarily know who did the makeup for Dick Tracy, but they're going to know who was on screen. Like they're going to yeah, know the wider spread names and stuff like that. So yeah. Cause I remember, and I'm guilty. Like I'm not super into music. So a lot of times when you interview musicians, it's lost on me. So I tend to skip those ones. But then when it comes to visual artists, of course, like I dig it and I listen to those. Yeah. And then of course, you know, podcasting personalities and all the people from Frog Pants, that's how I got into your show, was realizing, oh, cool, he's interviewed, you know, Scott. And did you interview Patrick? I feel like there was a...
I have not gotten to Patrick yet.
Not yet, yeah. But Tom was there. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of
Tom's
other...
Tom's been on twice.
Nice, yeah. And there's a couple of... Have you talked to Veronica yet?
No, I have not.
Yeah.
She's another one that's eluded me.
Well, very busy. Very busy people too, I'm sure. But I mean, and that's what pulled me in, you know, like that's like, hey, cool, I know all these people, you know, like I respect their work, I know them personally, a lot of them I've met at Nerdtacular, so that's, you know, that's really, really cool.
And what's really nice is, I mean, they're only 45 minutes to an hour, and if people who don't typically know who somebody is, and they hear something like a musician that they don't typically listen to, and at the end they listen to the music and they go, oh, this is actually really cool, this isn't too bad, they might go out and start becoming a fan themselves. And that's kind of what it is I don't request anyone that I don't expect or respect and admire.
Right.
So therefore, I'm only reaching out to people who I want to talk to. And I think that part shows, and kind of the enthusiasm and the respect and the kind of the way I approach them.
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds kind of weird to say, but that's how I schedule guests for Comics Coast to Coast. It's the same mm-hmm. thing. Cause that's one of my responsibilities on the show. I'm kind of the guy that goes out and finds the people. It's not difficult. I tend to get a lot of tweets and things happening in my social media feeds, Tumblr posts, people resharing stuff that I see art I like, and then I'll dig further to see if they're a comic artist, if they're maybe an editor or a writer, or, you know, how can they possibly fit into the show. I run it by Brian and Matt, of course, but most of the time they give me the, hey, okay, you know, two thumbs up, let's interview that person. But it's mostly my personal interest. Like, I mean, if I'm not necessarily taken by the comic, I don't always make plans to interview that person. Sometimes I do because I realize that it's a popular comic or it's a popular blog, and you know, like, you know that it's got some weight. And even at that point, there's something interesting I find about it. Like, maybe I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the work at a glance, but maybe the writing is going to grab me, so I have to give it, you know, some weight. You know, I have to give it some time to kind of sink in. A lot of times I'll be coming at it from like a business perspective. Like, maybe, you know, the comic is very well done, but the subject matter just isn't my thing. But then I'm just like, well, how is this person selling and marketing this comic? Because they're doing very well, you know? So then that becomes like my angle in the interview is usually kind of from a business perspective, that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I've interviewed some people who make some, you know, some really independent films that don't get a lot of notice, but I've really enjoyed the stories and I've really enjoyed the work ethic behind having them get made and that drive to plug away at independent film and do it maybe not so much because of the money, but because of the love.
Mm.
And those things, that stuff matters to me. So, you know, if someone's, you know, not a household name, mm-hmm. well, they might be at some point. But at the same time, that work ethic is even more admirable sometimes than the people who are, you know, sitting around and then just having lines delivered to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, I guess we can dig into a little bit of housekeeping here. Something that I forgot to mention last week on the show, and that is the upcoming release of Game of Thrones Season 5. April 15th is when that show will start. Or sorry, not April 15th, April 12th. April 15th is the date of the very first Citadel Cafe after the Game of Thrones airs on HBO. For those of you who might be new to the Citadel Cafe, when Game of Thrones starts, all other things cease to exist. And we become a all Game of Thrones all the time podcast for the season. And it's a great deal of fun. And if you're looking forward to the new season of Game of Thrones, be sure to check out the upcoming Winter is Coming segment on the Citadel Cafe starting on April 15th. Big spoilers. We don't even really warn you that much. We just kind of dive right in. So you're going to want to watch the episode before you listen to us. The only thing that we do not spoil is the books, because I've read all five and we are not there yet on the television show, although we're getting quite close. So I will not spoil the TV show, nor will my guests, but we don't spoil the books, but we definitely get into the TV show. I had that backwards. That'll happen a lot. That'll happen an awful lot on the show. I'll be referencing the book and trying to remember whether I'm spoiling the book or not, or the show or not, and it's a battle, and it gets really confusing. So hopefully there'll be lots of people in the chat room to help me straight.
Okay. I don't watch Game of Thrones.
I know. You're fired. No, we will try to figure something out.
People. You have to get more qualified people.
Yeah, we will figure something out for maybe some Hammond segments or something. Maybe, you'll pop in at the beginning and let us know what's going on in the rest of the world. Be like, you know, we'll touch base with reality. Reality with Hammond at the very beginning of the show to try to make sure that we don't miss any other things that are happening. You know, like, you know, Gotham or The Flash or whatever else is going on.
Yep.
But we do have something new to talk about this week, and a fun time on the Citadel Cafe is when both me and you have watched the same thing. So you want to kick it off, because I feel like you probably have more to say than I do.
Okay, well, we're talking about the Man in the High Castle, not the Maine in the High Castle, like the notes say.
Oh, do I have a typo in there?
Yeah. It's the Man
Somebody's
in the High Castle.
A perfectionist. Jeez. I'm gonna see how loudly I can press the delete key to correct this mistake. All right.
I actually almost read it as the Man in the High Castle, so that would have been me. But anyway, it's on Amazon, and it's one of the Amazon original pilots that they commissioned, and it got picked up. And I think it's going to be starting in the fall, according to what I read. And I watched it with my wife, and I know something's good when we both walk away liking it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more than good. It was amazing.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's this alternate history where The United States did not win World War II, and the United States is divided between the East Coast, which is run by the Nazis, and the West Coast, which is run by the Japanese Empire. And in the middle is a demilitarized zone. And they give you almost nothing to get started with. And the story starts to unfold. And just before it gets interesting, they say it's over. And I'm so glad it got picked up, because I might have to actually be mad at Amazon if they had not picked it up. But it is great. It's smart. It's well written. It doesn't pander. It doesn't cater. It makes you think about things. It makes you have to maybe even, I mean, if you're not fluent in your World War II, you might go back and learn things. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, and I feel like those people that are history buffs are going to get a lot out of this, because there's a lot of references that I'm thinking, like, I'm going to have to watch this a second time and maybe look up a couple of battles or names or places or things that I'm missing out on, because they seem to have, and I mean, because it's based on the book, and I'm sure that Philip K. Dick, that's the author, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm sure that, you know, he did his research, and all of it is very, very tied into history and what would have happened, sort of thing. But I really like the authenticity of it. You know, like it feels like something that could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I also really dig that it's a period piece. Like it's 1962.
Yeah. As soon as I saw it was a period piece, I'm like, this is freaking genius, and it's so well done.
Yeah, because if you throw it to now, right? Like if you had done this, but then put it as a modern show, which could be less effort from like a set dressing standpoint, right? You run into the problem of like, well, if this is going to change, then what would technology be like? And then you get into a lot of like really crazy special effects stuff, and it gets really complicated really fast. I love the fact that they just throw it back to the 60s and... I mean, I loved shows like Mad Men, and I'm really digging Agent Carter. I feel like I prefer period pieces in a lot of my war and spy stuff. It's like, you know, it's like the old gangster movies. Like I prefer those to be set in a period in history as opposed to like modern stuff. You get all the modern war and violence in the news. Yeah. I think maybe that's what it is like, you know, we're already kind of saturated with that, so that when they do this as a period piece, it has a charm to it, even though it's so far not a really happy story.
No, not at all. I enjoy it because I feel like that when you do a period piece, for the people who are really paying attention, they get things that people who aren't paying attention won't get.
Mm.
So they're references to news articles or to events that if you're in the know, you kind of get. It's kind of like watching Rocky and Bullwinkle or Mystery Science Theater 3000, where the jokes are at different levels, and sometimes you get everything and makes you feel super smart, and sometimes they make a reference to something and you're not sure what that is, and then you go back and learn about it.
Yeah, so that was me a lot of the show. I'm curious, I want to talk to Chad about this, because if he has an opportunity to see it, he's a big World War II history buff, and watches a lot of movies and stuff about that era, so I'm sure that he would get a lot out of it. I'd be very curious to hear his thoughts. I enjoy those movies, but I'm not as steeped in the details. I get the gist of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm definitely going to have to. I'm probably going to watch it again and just have this time have like, you know, the iPad with me and just like, you know, look stuff up, pause it as I go, that sort of thing.
Well, it sparked me to look up some of the other pilots that were on there, and I watched a couple of them. I watched the Ron Perlman one, The Hand of God, where he plays a judge, and I made it maybe three quarters of the way through, and it didn't get picked up, and I can kind of see why.
Yeah.
It just didn't catch me. But the after, it was a Chris Carter, the guy who did the X-Files.
Okay.
That one was picked up and then suddenly dropped in January. And I have no idea why or what happened to it, but I'm kind of upset that one didn't work. I was really enjoying that one. And it was this event that happened, and these people were trapped in a parking garage in LA, and then they get out, and the whole world's gone nuts, and they don't know why, and everyone has the same birthday. And it started piling in all these things that kind of crossed Lost and the X-Files.
Okay.
And it was this nice mix. And I'm really sad that didn't get picked up. Might get picked up later, but
yeah. And that's the worst thing about those kind of shows, when the pilots don't get you know, when the series don't get picked up and people can still access the pilot, is that there's this huge cliffhanger, right? You know, like,
yeah.
You're like, I don't know how this is ever going to end, you know? Well, you never know, like maybe it'll get optioned by somebody else. I mean, I'm sure that Amazon probably would have had some sort of like non-compete sort of thing, so they can't just chop it around to Netflix or make a movie out of it or something like that. They probably
and Chris Carter's one of those names that everyone knows, so I'm sure that if he had his hand in it, there was something more to the story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know, maybe it'll just be like a web series. Maybe it'll be like a YouTube series. That would be, you know, depending on what they need for budget, that could be something doable. I was disappointed because I looked at some of the descriptions of the pilots and I wanted to check them out. I had to find, we'll say, other means to watch The Man in the High Castle because of my location in Canada, which cannot access things like Amazon Prime or Pilots or Hulu, or I feel like there's one other service that we don't get. Anyway, there's a whole lot. Despite the fact that the advertisement at the end of Man in the High Castle was to go to amazon.co.uk, which usually bodes well. So I went there and I thought, hey, I'll go tell them I like this show and I will pay for it. Mm-hmm. Turns out even if I could pay for it, I couldn't get it. So... Yeah, disappointed. Take my money, Amazon, but apparently you don't want my money. It's funny colors, I admit, but I think that
and they all have Spock drawn on them now.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. That was quite funny. I really appreciate that. I heard on Daily Tech News Show that Will Shatner had tweeted that he has never been so happy to see the Canadian $5 bill defaced. Not the exact quote, but I thought it was quite funny.
I'm super excited about this getting picked up, and my wife and I are counting the days until we.
Yeah,
if we weren't Amazon Prime, you know, whores at this point, we would be now.
Yeah. What's the cost of Amazon Prime to get the streaming for you guys?
It's like $79 with the free shipping and the streaming and all that stuff.
Right. So you get free shipping on Amazon.
Yeah,
for whatever you order.
Yeah, free 2-day shipping.
Jeez. And then you get to watch all the streams.
Yeah.
And that's $80 a year.
Uh-huh.
That's nothing.
Yeah, especially that's... like Bill Duran was talking about how he ordered a 45-pound kettlebell, which was free shipping in
nice.
2 days.
Bill Duran, what does Bill Duran do with a 45-pound kettlebell?
He's working out.
Jeez. Bill. That is a heavy kettlebell, man. Have you ever lifted a kettlebell?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Man. Attaboy, Bill. I need to catch up to Bill, apparently. I've used them and I work out with them, but I can tell you right now, it's not a 45-pound one. Jeez. All right. What else have you been watching? Anything good?
Well, I watched The Flash.
Oh, good. So we're I did the only one I didn't catch was... No, I'm up to speed because there wasn't one.
Because I spoiled the one. So I'm all caught up with The Flash.
Yeah, that's a good show. I'm really digging it. Did you like that last one with Firestorm?
I did. I don't know all the history. Every time you think of Firestorm, I instantly go to Firestar, which is a completely different thing. But that's okay. I'll get used to it.
Yeah. Either they made him up for the TV show, or they're doing their own spin on an existing DC character. A little bit of a spoiler here, people. I apologize. If you haven't seen The Flash up to date, then you might want to just fast forward a little bit. But I like the idea of... Ronnie and I don't remember the character's name.
The guy who built the Titanic.
That guy. The guy that's in everything that I can't remember his name. But the character in the show, it was Professor somebody. And what happens is in the accident, in the super collider explosion, this guy's experiment combines him with Ronnie and they become one person at an atomic level. And when they're together, they have fire ability. So his head catches on fire, kind of like the Human Torch, and he can shoot fire out of his hands to the point where he can fly kind of like a jet. But when they're apart, they can't do that. However, they can still communicate with each other because their emotions and stuff are tied. And I thought it was very neat. It's like, I mean, it's been meta human of the week since the series started. That's fine. It's the first season. They're doing it very well. This was a really unique take. I like that it wasn't just one more dude with powers. It was, no, there's two guys. They both have like significant others that they basically have to leave in order to figure out what's going wrong with them. And if they want to help and be superheroes, they have to be like, they have to join. They can't do anything separately, you know? And
when they combine, it kind of feels like a really smart, not sucking Ghost Rider.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great analogy, actually. Yeah, I agree. Again, it was super, super cool. The only thing about that storyline that I thought was pretty weak was how quickly Dr. Snow, kind of her feelings for Ronnie, she kind of like just takes a step back and is accepting the fact that he's now back from the dead. Her fiance is back from the dead, and in the course of two episodes is leaving again. She didn't seem very upset. I would imagine that most people would be just crushed. You know,
well,
by that.
Did it feel like, again, this might be treading lightly on spoiler ice, but did you feel like they were getting ready to start a spinoff?
With Firestorm?
Yeah, with the two dudes going off to find their cure.
No, I think that was an excuse not to have them in every episode. I think that
I have the feeling, I don't know, I got this burning feeling, that there might be a spinoff because they're having such luck. I feel like they're gonna go Ant-Man on this and come up with their own show.
Really? I don't know. I think that they were kind of alluding to the fact that Snow has got a crush on
Barry.
Barry Allen.
I think that's been brewing for a while. I think that's kind of the Mulder and Scully of that series.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. And I think that they couldn't continue that if Ronnie was still around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like if Ronnie was still around, they would get married, and every once in a while he'd have to jump out in the middle of the night, combine with Professor Guy, and fly off and save the day. And I think that would just be, all of a sudden you're getting into the Flash now has a team on the show, and that's not what that show is about. The show is definitely about what Barry Allen is going through. And I was right. I knew when they were starting to dance around the time travel thing that obviously we're coming up on like Flashpoint Paradox territory.
But I
had guessed silently that the Flash, Barry Allen, was actually in the room when his mother died.
Kind of made that jump too.
Yeah, and they revealed that this last episode, and again, they're doing very well. Like it's since the mid-season break, the plot has, there's been a larger overarching plot for the season.
And they're doing it very well. They're making it almost like a murder mystery for that part of the story.
Yeah.
While they're dealing with the bright colored clad superhero bad guy of the week kind of stories.
Yeah.
They're doing a very good job of keeping the murder mystery part alive.
Yeah. And they're not scared. No. Gorilla Grodd is in the show, man. Mm-hmm.
I can't wait.
That is incredible. He was always one of my favorite cartoon villains in the Justice League. I always really enjoyed the stories that they did with him because he's just so powerful, being a telepath. And is he telekinetic? No, he's just telepathic.
I don't know much about him. I'm just really excited because they're going to go into a realm of like computer animation and special effect with this that TV shows don't go.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing. You can nowadays. If you get the budget and you've got the following, which I hope this show does, because it's very, very good, then you can really pull it off. And I think from what I've seen so far, they've got, the Flash is handled. Like, they can do pretty much everything that he's going to be doing and doing it very well as far as special effects go. But the Grodd stuff so far has been kind of dark sewer, there might have been some practical effects. There's definitely been some CG, and it wasn't movie quality, but it was still believable enough for me. What I like about it, something that is very smart, is that even in the comics, he talks. Like Gorilla Grodd, for those of you that don't know, he's a gorilla. And he's super smart, he speaks, and he's telepathic. So in the show so far, you hear his voice, but you hear it from the perspective of other characters as they hear it in their head. You're not actually hearing him say stuff out loud, which again, avoids lip sync and stuff that would look really kind of stupid, if they didn't do it right. And if they avoid it, like, oh man, they could do some really, really cool stuff. And like I said, they're not afraid of doing really crazy off-the-wall stuff. They set it up from the very beginning, expect the impossible, and therefore, when you've got two dudes that are atomically linked that combine into a fire-spewing metahuman, you're just like, sure, I'm on board. This works.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm good.
And I still like the fact it's bright-colored and it has a sense of humor, and there's that kind of jovial relationship where people actually care about each other. And it's not brooding and angsty. It's a real, genuine slap on the back, take care of your buddy kind of relationship that they have with everybody. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. And there's the campy nicknames, like a lot of these, the villains are inspired by Flash villains. And one of the scientists at Star Labs, he's the one that gives them these goofy names, and everybody rolls their eyes. It's the real name from the comic book, but it just like it, because it's kind of campy, everybody kind of like Captain Cold and not the Blur, there was somebody else, there was another villain recently that got a name. She was a girl that disappeared and could warp through space, and I can't remember what he called her, but again, it was Peekaboo or something.
Yeah, something like
that. It was you know, and all of the other characters on screen all roll their eyes when he says it. It's brilliant stuff.
Speaking of broody, angsty, caring about people, have you caught up on The Arrow?
What's the last thing I saw on The Arrow? I'm pretty sure, yes, I have.
Has he gone back to
the place with Ra's al Ghul?
Uh-huh.
Yes. I'm struggling with that show constantly. I really didn't like what they were doing with Malcolm Merlyn, and I just feel like they've painted themselves into a corner and they're really struggling to get out of it. There's been a lot of times where Oliver should be dead, and the only reason he isn't dead is because someone decided not to kill him. Like it's just pure luck that he's still alive on many occasions. And I can't, like, I know I've said this before, I'm going to sound like the hater on the show. I can't stand Laurel. It is an absolutely useless plot point. She should just be a lawyer and stay a lawyer and stay the hell out of the superhero game. It's there's no way that she would ever be even close to capable of what needs to be done in the show. And I mean, we're into season three now, so we're almost at the end of season three. I mean, he's got Arsenal, there's Arrow, there's Diggs, there is, I guess now,
Merlyn, his daughter.
Merlyn and Speedy. I can't remember her real name. What's his sister's name?
Thea.
Thea, right. I really enjoy Thea as an actor. I think she was on The O.C.?
I don't know. Yeah. I have not seen.
She played someone's little sister. Him. She was a lot younger, but I thought she's always had acting chops. But I really enjoy the acting in the show. I just feel like the lines and the situations are really, really forced. The only thing that I've been really kind of curious to see and where it's been going and have been enjoying it is the Felicity and the
Superman.
Adam.
Yeah, the Superman
storyline. Yeah. Yeah. And that was a cool reward at the end of that. Yep. At the last episode where he becomes or turns on. Is it the Adam suit? Like that's what he's.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very Iron Man-y, like it feels very Iron Man-like, and I'm not familiar enough with the comics to know whether that's true or false, but I'm curious to see where they're going to go with that. And
that's
again,
the only reason I'm coming back is that storyline.
Yeah, and again, special effects in the show, like they made a blue and red Iron Man-looking outfit, and the guy took off and flew around, and it did not look campy at all. It looked pretty cool. Nope.
Yeah, it looked really good. Even that shot where he was flying off the roof at the camera that was in the sky.
Yeah.
That could have been really, really bad because it was a plate shot, but they made it work.
Oh, yeah. And no, it looks good.
I bought it hook, line, and sinker on an HD 65-inch TV, and I had no problem with it.
Yeah, and I like Routh as an actor. I think he's good. I didn't necessarily enjoy Superman Returns as much as other Superman films, but I didn't hate it. And I've always liked him.
Yeah, he was great in Chuck. You still need to go listen to watch Chuck.
Yeah. There's a lot. I've seen him in a couple of other things where he's been kind of like a guest actor. Wasn't he in... it's a comic book movie, Canadian.
Alpha Flight?
No. I'm going to blank on that. Chat room, help me out. It was the guy plays video games and he has to kill 9 ex-boyfriends of the girl that he wants to date.
Oh,
Anyway, the chat room will help me out. Sam's in the chat room. She will save me. She always does.
Hang on. Scott Pilgrim.
Thank you. Scott Pilgrim versus the world or something.
I did that without cheating.
Yeah. that was, I really enjoyed Ralph in that because he did like a cameo or something. I thought that was kind of cool. The other thing that I did catch up on is Gotham. And I'm going to say that The Flash and Gotham are my two superhero shows. Like they're my two new shows. The Arrow, I keep up just because eventually there's going to be another Flash crossover and I have to keep up to speed. But Gotham, I'm really enjoying. Have you caught up with that?
I have not even broken the seal on Gotham yet.
Oh, okay. Well, I won't. I can't really complain about what I wanted to complain
about. No, you go right ahead, because I'm not a big spoiler guy, so it's not a big deal. So go right ahead.
All right. So here we go. The last episode, everybody's pausing their podcast if they haven't seen it. There's some captives, and they are being harvested for body parts, and someone is removing their eyeballs. And Fish Mooney, who is still on this goddamn show, removes her own eyeball while conscious and barely flinches.
So she goes all...
with a spoon. She uses a spoon.
So she goes all Minority Report.
Yep. Yep. But there's no anesthetic. There's no operation. She just guts her eye with a spoon and it lands on the floor. And then she steps on it. It is the dumbest freaking thing I have ever seen on television. The show is gritty. Like, it's not a superhero show. It's not like The Flash. It's about Jim Gordon and the Gotham precinct. It's about weird murders and kooky, crazy people and how crime in Gotham is escalating. And you're slowly getting to the point where you're seeing hints at future villains. Like this last couple plot lines were about the birth of the Scarecrow. And mostly it was dealing with his dad, who is starting work with Fear before Jonathan Crane starts working with Fear. Very, very cool stuff, but believable. Like, he was harvesting the adrenal glands of people that were scared to death right before they died. Like, it made sense, right? It was feasible. This Fish Mooney bullshit is just dumb. She's a horrible actor, and she's a dumb character. She's already been ousted from her position in the mob, which was long overdue. I don't understand how this bitch is not dead. Like, everything else about the show is great. I really enjoy Selina Kyle, Bruce, and Alfred are wonderful. And I thought I wasn't going to like that. I thought I wasn't going to like getting to know 12-year-old, 14-year-old Bruce Wayne, but it's really enjoyable. There's some very dark plot stuff happening, you know, in and around the whole thing. Man, it's such a good show, and it just suffers from this one little thing. Like, whenever Fish Mooney's on the screen, I basically fast forward. Like, I don't even care.
Hulu does not have the back issue or back episodes. They don't go very far back, so I'm gonna have to wait till it shows up somewhere as a full season.
As a season, yeah. It's hard too, because it's the first season, so you're gonna have to wait until it's over. Possibly you're gonna see it before season two. You'll see the first season be available.
Yeah, that's for streaming what I'll stuff probably like that. End up doing.
Yeah, I might even rewatch it. It's worth looking at. And Benjamin McKenzie is fantastic as Jim Gordon. Again, another OC guy. But I like him as an actor. He's really, really good. And oh gosh, she played Inara on Firefly, and I don't forget her name. I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. She was also in the remake of V.
Yeah, is it Marina? I think it might be her first name. But she is phenomenal in this, and she's playing a well-known Batman character, Doctor. I'm gonna have to look this up. Gotham. Who is she playing? She's playing a doctor that later on works with the Arkham inmates, I guess.
Oh my gosh. I know who you're talking about, because I learned it during the Batman animated series.
Yeah, she's been in several. She's been in the animated show. She's been in all that kind of stuff, yeah. Trying to look this up really quick. Alfred. Ivy Pepper, so that's Poison Ivy, Medical Examiner. Wow, I thought she would be higher. There we go, Dr. Leslie Tompkins.
That's right.
Marina Baccarin.
Yeah.
So she's a phenomenal actor. She's very good in the show, and she at the moment is playing Jim Gordon's love interest. Which is very cool to see how some of the other Batman characters have a history outside of just their relationship with Batman and Bruce Wayne. Sorry for the stumble, folks. It was really important that I remember that.
I love it when you can take a step back from a story that we all know and love and then look at it from a different set of eyeballs. And I wish that we ever had that opportunity to do that more often with certain things. And comics really lend us to that. But I would love to see, like, Spider-Man told through the eyes of somebody else other than Peter Parker.
Mm.
Because being in their head and wondering, gee, how come he's always late for class? And what's with this? And what's with that? And how come he has that mysterious black eye? And what's with, you know, those kind of conversations could be really interesting in short bursts. That's which is why the DC Elseworld stories were always real fun, like the Marvel What Ifs.
Yeah.
Were always kind of fun to read.
Yeah. Thanks to Sam in the chat room. It is Bakarin is the way you pronounce Marina's last name. And unfortunately, there's a little bit of a delay between us and the chat room. So if we don't see your answer quite as quickly as you want, then I apologize. I think there's about a minute or so between us and the live stream. The show itself for Gotham, as far as like these relationships outside of it and people getting like, you know, sick of superheroes, which is a conversation that's happening in the chat room right now. It really doesn't have a lot to do with Batman. It's more about the city and the villains. And
so it's like Gotham CSI or CSI Gotham?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, and as a matter of fact, the CSI on staff at the Gotham PD is the Riddler.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And he's, you know, 20 something and really annoying and dorky. He has a crush on the records keeper in the basement. Like, yeah, it's worth watching because it has some humor in and among, you know, some of the more kooky villains. But then the darker villains are just creepy. Like, they've got a lot of really cool stuff, you know, going on. Well, that's it for me for what we've been watching. Do you have anything to add to the list before we move on?
No, I'm excited to talk to you about what I've been listening to.
All right, cool. Well, let her rip, man.
Okay, I bought the Blu-ray version of an album called The Raven Who Refused to Sing. It's by Steve Wilson. And I have it in full, glorious HD audio. And it is absolutely amazing. The link I put is to the title track. And the animation and the art style in the video, super cool. And the music is just amazing.
Nice, I'll have to check this out.
Alan Parsons, known for his stuff with Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon. He also has the Alan Parsons Project. He was the engineer of the album, you know, and it in full HD, I was just put it on and just zoned out to it yesterday, and it was glorious. And it's so well written, and it's so moody and so atmospheric and just interesting music to make you think about things. And the best part is each track of the album is the story is a story, an independent story based on something of the supernatural nature. And I cannot say enough about this. I'm looking to buy the full 2-disc set now. I mean, it's really good and I cannot recommend it enough.
Nice. I'm curious to see the animated music video. I didn't have time before the show, but I always go back and check, and I usually embed YouTube videos into the show notes. So if you are looking for this or listening to the podcast on demand, head over to thecitadelcafe.com and check out the show notes, and we'll have the links to all the stuff right in there.
I feel pressure now when we, a few months back, you said something about how I always bring cool music. Now I feel like I need to make sure I have something. Have something cool there.
You listen to so much music and you always have such a unique pick that I don't ever feel any pressure. Whatever you happen to be listening to, I'm sure is going to be brand new to everybody listening. It is to me. Like I found a couple of people. There was I don't remember whether I was going to use this as my pick this week. I think I had bookmarked it as a pick for 1 week on the Citadel Cafe, but then neglected or forgot about it. But there's a guy that does an acoustic version of Thunderstruck by AC/DC. On his guitar, and he's walking around in what looks like a parking garage.
Oh yeah, I've seen that video.
Yeah, I've posted it on Facebook. Like I've shared it on social media before, but just not directly on the show. But it was really, really cool. And I'm pretty sure I found that going down a YouTube rabbit hole that you sent me on. Yeah. So yeah, it's always worth following the links from Hammond about music. And speaking of music, you can listen to those beats and tweaks and strums with your Tweaked Audio high-performance noise-reducing earbuds. They are the sponsors of our Internet Minute. Visit tweakedaudio.com. Use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. They offer 7 different styles. Mic'd sets are available, and they're compatible with all kinds of different MP3s and smartphones. And there's also a lifetime warranty. So if you are using currently some Tweaked Audio earbuds in. Not that you would have any problems with them, but if they do have some issues, you can always return them and talk to Tweaked Audio about their lifetime warranty. It's tweakedaudio.com, and the code, of course, is TCC. My pick this week also happens to be about music. I just caught this before the show, and it was too good not to share. And it's more about the emotion of the piece than it is the song, because I don't really necessarily enjoy the song. But there is a Street Drummer video on, I think it was on BuzzBeat or something. It's a weird Facebook page that I didn't recognize. This girl that looks to be in her, I don't know, mid-teens, sets up in a park with her drum set and her speakers, and plays along to a song that she obviously very much enjoys. And she just looks like she loves drumming. She's fantastic at it. It's so fun to watch. If you need a pick-me-up, you're going to be tapping your foot by the end of this video. It's super, super cool. Just check out A Very Happy Street Drummer. The link is going to be in the show notes. What about you, Hammond? What's your pick?
I picked another music piece, and it's Keith Medley, who is a guitar player, but he plays a very crazy version of a harp guitar. And it's got 27 strings, and the piece of music is incredibly dynamic to listen to, and it's amazing that all that noise is coming from one dude and one instrument.
I think I saw something on Facebook. You might have been the one that shared it. Hollow of the Mountain King?
No, this is actually a different piece, because Hollow of the Mountain King is good, but it doesn't really show the dynamic range and the interest that this piece of music does.
Right. Now, is this similar to the instrument that you play?
No, this is actually a guitar, except it's called a harp guitar, and they have an open area that has bass strings, and his has an open area that has pre-tuned real high strings.
Okay.
Mine's just a Chapman stick, which is, 10 strings tuned across, and you tap on it instead of strumming.
Right.
And fretting.
Right. Okay. Interesting. I feel like that's, the tapping is what this kid that was doing the AC/DC cover was doing a lot of.
Yes, a lot of tapping in that piece of music.
Yeah. It was very cool. Very, very cool. Right on. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Show up and hang out with Phil and Sam in the chat room. They're having a lot of fun, and you could have that fun too. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio. Go to tunein.alphageekradio.com to find out how you can listen on your favorite device. For the Citadel Cafe, just choose Channel 1 and Showtime. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and this episode will be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com to tell us how wrong we were, or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am doing online at joelduggan.com. And please check out my Patreon page. That's patreon.com/joelduggan. Contributions on the page go directly to support this podcast and my comic work, Starcrossed. If you like this podcast, or if you're enjoying the comic, please consider becoming a patron for as little as $1 a month. And if you're not a subscription kind of person, then just share the page with other people. You never know who's going to be able to pitch in and help me break that $100 mark, which I am encroaching on quickly. You can also follow me on Twitter and Tumblr with just my name, Joel Duggan. Hammond, where can people find you online?
I am at Jay Hammond C on Twitter, and you can find me at my shows, Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C, and at GrumpyCast with Daryl the Trek Nerd.
You have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two, and they're in the chat room. I'm laughing at Phil in the chat room.
I know.
One of us.
Yeah. He was killing me during the show. It was like,
yeah.
When I talked about the story being told from other people's eyes, he says, Uncle Ben, it'd be a really short story.
I missed that. It's a good thing I did, because I would have snorted on the show. Well, thanks for stopping by, Phil, and thank you, Sam. Sam is going to be on the show soon. We have to work out a schedule. I don't need mail open. That's distracting.
But keeping your female open, that.
Wow. Walked into that one. Holy cow. On that note.